VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 403, recorded on October 23, 2015. Welcome to the 403rd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 236th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, it's really disappointing that we don't have Paul for this episode because Gem and the Holograms was released. And I was hoping to get Paul on so he could tell us how right he was for the past year on how terrible it was going to be.
I don't think anybody was really surprised or doubted him that it would be bad.
I was actually surprised it had a high Rotten Tomatoes rating of 23%. I thought it was going to be much lower than that.
Wow.
But I guess if it's inoffensive, you know, and just bland, then you're going to have some positive reviews because, hey, you know, whatever. I would have read one of the reviews in front of Paul from AV Club. It was a medium length, just so that he could comment on the review. So yeah, we don't have Paul for Gem and the Holograms, but we do have Scott Dirk for the other stuff. I don't know what other stuff there is. Maybe because you know, this is not a news item, but I'm going to bring it up. Is that Bethesda re-released once again the Pip-Boy edition of Fallout 4. And I'm pretty sure, and that was today, and I'm pretty sure by the time I'm speaking this, a couple of hours later, it's probably all sold out again.
Yeah, it's sold out long before we even, it was hours ago. It got sold out that quick.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're getting off the production line, and not much time left. It's November 10th, I think, because November 3rd, November 4th, November 10th are going to be really heavy video game releases. As a matter of fact, Halo 5 is coming out sooner than I thought. I forgot the release date for it, but it's actually coming out in 4 days. I will say that, remember when I said I had pre-ordered the $250 version? I canceled that pre-order and got the $99 version, and here's why. I'm not going to spend an extra $150 for a really big statue with fragile pieces, because A, they're going to get broken, and B, I have too much clutter anyway. And C, I don't care about statues, really. I was hoping for something cool, like binoculars, or, you know, like they did with Call of Duty. Once they did infrared glasses, and then they did a remote drone, you know, and that sort of stuff. I would have preferred something like that, but statue, don't need it. I'm just getting the limited edition, which comes with all the books and the downloadable content and the extra paraphernalia, which I do enjoy, all the backstory stuff, you know? So I did that.
Yeah, I think you said that previous episode that you had canceled the pre-order, so you do bring up a good point that they should have included something more interactive, like a little remote control car, like, or whatever that's in the, like one of the vehicles in the game would probably be awesome.
Well, Total War Warhammer has the High King Edition, which is worth it, because it comes with a steel metal flagon with its own stand that you can drink out of. It comes with a whetstone pendant. It comes with a key ring, which has a rotatable, has runes in the inside that you can rotate, you know, and all the other DLC and book stuff. And the thing is, it's £99. It's in Europe. They're shipping it from Europe. And the only reason why I'm not ordering it is because it's £39 shipping. Wow. That is over $60 US.
That still sounds cheaper than the Halo special.
Yeah, altogether it's going to cost $215, but I'm asking a friend of mine in the UK if maybe he can pre-order it for me. And then if he visits the United States, he can give it to me at my leisure. Although, you know, I'm going to say something. It might be that this is one of those the Legendary Edition of Halo 3. Remember that? The one that came with the helmet? Those are still on the shelves long after it was done. Although I don't think that's going to be the case with this. But yeah, Halo 5 is coming out in 4 days, or 2 days probably by the time this podcast comes out. So yeah, I have, you know, I have the Halo collection in my thing. I haven't completed Halo 4. So either I look at the video from IGN, which recaps Halo 4 entirely, or I do a speed run of Halo 4 on the easiest settings, so I can get caught up in the story.
Speed run probably sounds good if you want to just get caught up.
Yeah. So, I guess we're going to be talking about what we've been playing, because I just told you what I've been playing. I've also played this interactive fiction text adventure game.
Ooh, no graphics, huh?
No graphics. It's called Choices of the End of the Deathless. Choices of the Deathless. The reason why I got it is that the sequel came out today, and it cost $3 to get the previous game, so I did that. And I liked what I saw. And basically, it's basically choose your own adventure. And that's all it is choose your own adventure. And the story is weird in a good way, because here's the thing, is you're playing an insurance agent for gods and demons. And it goes through all the machinations you have to, of how you deal with gods and how you deal with demons and the magic you have to use and the legalese you have to study, that sort of stuff. It's really strange and weird. And if you're into choose your own adventure, you're into text adventure games, you know, just $3, you know, for the first game. See if you like it. Oh, and the other thing is that you can have a romance just like Mass Effect, and you can be gay, bi, or straight. You know, and you get to choose how much. It's just wonderfully weird. And if you pay attention to the text and what's going on, it is really something unusual and new. Even though there's a lot of reading, and after 3 hours, I had to stop reading because there's 150,000 words in this thing, which is about the equivalent of Planescape Torment. So
I like reading, so that doesn't bother me.
Yeah, so it's $3, and the sequel came out today, so I'm probably going to buy the sequel, too. And, you know, $3, how could I go wrong? I mean, it's basically transit fare one way in New York City subway. So
is that on GOG or Steam?
Steam. And I've been earning achievements, too. Steam achievements with it. Imagine if you could earn Steam achievements with Zork. Well, maybe you can. I don't know. So that's one thing. I also got a download code for Warhammer, The End Times Vermintide. And basically, it's Left for Skaven. And for those who don't know the Warhammer universe, Skavens are just giant rat people. And it's basically Left for Dead with giant rat people instead of zombies. So, you know, the tank is a gigantic muscular rat.
I'm hearing now the Chaos Faction of the Warhammer game is DLC.
DLC, yes. If you pre-order it, it's free.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of people are pretty angry about that.
You know what? I'm going to tell you this. I saw Total War Warhammer at E3, demoed in front of me, right? Oh, and Brian Fargo was there promoting Wasteland 2, and that's another thing I want to talk about. Actually, I think it's a news item. Yeah, it's a news item, so we'll talk about that later. But I'm going to say right now, pre-order it. You won't be disappointed. Flat out. See, the thing is, people are angry about Total War Rome 2. I don't know why. Maybe it was a buggy mess or something like that. But the people at Creative Assembly are really into Warhammer, and they are putting every inch of their effort into Total War Warhammer. And I'm going to say, the graphics are astounding. You know, for a real-time strategy game, you will really enjoy just looking at this game, even more so than any other Total War game. So if you have any doubts, just pre-order it. Get the Chaos Faction free. You know, there's probably going to be other DLC that you have to pay for, so you might as well get the first one free.
Yeah.
And don't get any High King editions, because I want one for myself. They do have a limited edition.
Right.
But it only comes with, let's see, it doesn't come with any of those huge physical things. It comes with, it comes with the DLC, it comes with the disc, it comes with the metal case, but I'm going to tell you something. If you do a Google for, High King Edition of Total War Warhammer, the the goblet, the metal goblet, is big and gorgeous. It's carved, you know. Everything is carved, by the way, intricately, which is probably why this thing costs so much. I mean, if you're a Warhammer fan, you should have already pre-ordered the High King Edition. Even if the game sucks, you have some great paraphernalia going with it.
Oh, you know? That is a nice mug.
Yeah, and it has a stand there, so it can just sit there.
Yeah, well, you kind of need the stand. It looks like
it's a cornucopia, basically.
Yeah,
it's a horn. Mm-hmm. It's a horn which you drink from. I'm pretty sure a lot of people are going to want to drink beer from that horn.
Oh yeah,
just like a dwarf. Well, actually, when did it come that dwarves really love to booze up? I mean,
everybody loves to booze up.
No, but dwarves, you see, in Order of the Stick, they can't get drunk. They drink every second they can get. They just enjoy the buzz, you know? I mean, here's the thing, you know, elves, they love their wine. The humans love wine and stuff like that. But orcs, they just want booze. They want beer. I mean, it makes sense since beer is made by roots, you know, the roots of stuff.
Yeah.
But anyways, the High King edition of Total War Warhammer is spectacular. And if my friend gets it for me, I'll be eternally grateful. But, on the other hand, I'm just fine getting regular old Warhammer. I don't need the statue, which also, by the way, is connected by a magnet, so you can pull it apart and turn it into a bookends for stuff.
That's cool.
But, yeah, it's huge, too, which is why it's so expensive. But, no, I'll deal with the limited edition for $99. I think it's 99 or 89 or something like that. I'm getting it from Amazon, so it'll come quickly. They actually said at Amazon it's going to be coming the day of launch. So I think maybe it's already shipped. So anyways, what have you been playing?
Well, I've been playing The Trials in the Sky, the first game. I've been playing it because I've seen that they're coming out with sequel.
Yeah, next week.
Next week. So, like, I figure I might as well beat the game.
Did you just buy the game, or did you play the game and you're just playing it again?
I've bought it like last year, and I'm just getting around to playing it more because I've been trying to finish these games that
I
started.
You know the stat that 25% of the games that are bought on Steam have never been played.
Yes, I've
people just thanks to the humble bundles.
Yeah, there are some games that I've been given that I either didn't like after playing it, or just really didn't want to play it that much.
You didn't play it though. See, that's the thing. I'm talking about they don't even open it. You know, for example, I have The Binding of Isaac, and I bought that. I didn't get it in a humble bundle because it was on sale for $1.47 with the expansion, but I still haven't played it yet. And everybody's telling me how great it is. It's an action RPG, you know, sort of like a roguelike, except really, really dark and depressing and weird.
It looked like some sort of weird puzzle game,
not a puzzle game. It's, you see, the thing is, when you do certain actions, you can get certain powers, you can unlock characters that you can play, which is probably why you thought it was a puzzle game. No, you're just going around and avoiding, it's like Zelda Dungeons, the game, except
yeah,
with really
like, that's,
gross
that's
and
what I meant
disgusting.
By puzzle. That's what I meant by puzzle, but
gross and disgusting characters. But that's okay.
Yeah, it looked like you were a fetus.
Sort of. You know, Edward McMullen, who developed the game along with another guy. They also did Team Meat. So, they did Super Meat Boy. He said that was his way of conquering dark depression, deep depression.
Okay.
Now, do you know? Oh, shoot, what's the name of that game? The Stanley Parable?
Yes.
Okay, he made a sequel, right? I forgot the name of the game. Anyways, this game is a game which you go around searching through someone's computer, and it gets really dark and depressing, and that's because the guy who did Stanley Parable was suicidal, and he made a game to help him out of that, too. So we have all these games that are helping people through their depression.
That is very nice that they have these therapeutic games.
And the therapeutic games that we're getting are really symbols of their depression. So when you play the sequel to... it's not a sequel, though. It's just his next game.
Mark on how emotionally invested people can get with video games and through them and And then, I mean, like, this was a positive case of them working through their depression. Yeah. And this
the ex-girlfriend of the guy who created Gamergate actually did a game called Depression the Game. And that's what started Gamergate, because he accused her of sleeping with a guy from Kotaku to give her a good review on the game. Of course, the fact is that they never reviewed the game. And they did the interview long before she broke up with that guy. So it's a mess. But the point is that she did a game called Depression the Game, you know? Mm-hmm. So anyways...
Yeah. I mean, people use all sorts of various ways to deal with the depression, like books, games, movies. So it's really nice to see them use games that way. It adds more credence to video games as a medium.
Okay, well, getting back to the JRPG you've been playing...
Yeah, I really feel like Trials of the Sky really feels like it should be on a portable. I know you can get it for PSP, and I never even knew this game existed until I saw it on GOG, and that's where I bought it. And it has these moments where you want to click on the screen, or need to, and you have to use your mouse, which is a little awkward since I'm using a controller to play the game. Yeah. So it feels a little weird to stop, move my mouse, okay, go back to the controller, and it feels a little clumsy, and it's like, this would be nice if I was playing this on a portable. Too bad Sony didn't push this enough.
That's the thing, is that actually, it's also made, by the way, by the guys who did Ys, or YS, or whatever that is.
Eyes. Eyes.
Yeah. Same guys, just so you know. But, I mean, it was released on portable as well. That reminds me of a news item that we could have done, but we're not doing. And if Jordan was here, he would go on a rant for about an hour about it. But Sony announced that they're not making any more first-party games for the Vita. They said flatly, nope, we're not doing it. Sorry. So yeah, the Vita is essentially dead. Because the company is not making any first-party games. That's death. That no one cares anymore. Makes me think that they're going to announce something like the Vita 2 at E3 next year, or they're going to pull out entirely from mobile consoles.
This is why they should have pushed RPGs for portable, because I really would like to play an RPG on a portable where you can save your game at any point in time. You know, if your battery is about to run out or you have to stop, you know, it's fine.
That's what the 3DS is for, apparently, now. Because it ain't going to be for the Vita.
I got some RPGs on the 3DS, so that's where I'm getting my RPG fix for portable.
Or, you know, the Vita is region-free, so if you're on a Vita, you should start considering getting Japanese Vita games, because they'll still make them there. It's just... You know, they try to stuff too many features into the Vita. I mean, really, a rear touchscreen, unnecessary. It doesn't need to be a phone. It doesn't need to make show movies. It doesn't need to do any of that crap. There's one thing that people want from a portable game system that is actually play games.
That is part of the frustration with some of these things where they try to make them jack of all trades, you know, and then they just put too much crap in there, and they're not really as good as something that's purely focused, like a really high quality camera is going to be better than an iPhone camera or the camera on these DS. Oh my God, the 3DS camera is so grainy. It's not even funny.
The 3DS camera is really for virtual, not virtual reality, augmented reality.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I mean, if I want to play games on a portable, I just play it on the iPad or my Android phone, you know? And it makes me wonder if Sony is going to start making mobile phone games. I mean, because Nintendo's already said they're going to do that, you know, and they've already mentioned there's going to be a Pokemon game on iOS/Android, which is, you know, it's not the true Pokemon, but that's just the gateway, you know. Once you start making a Pokemon on a mobile device, you've hooked people. You know, they're going to microtransactions. They'll be perfectly happy with that for Pokemon.
Right.
Anyways, talking about companies that are acting strangely, we're going to move on to the first news side. See, how's that for a segue?
Very nice.
Konami insists Hideo Kojima is still working at their company. And this comes to us from CD Mag Online. Hideo Kojima's status at Konami remains murky as the publisher insists that Metal Gear Solid's creator is still employed there. refuting a report by The New Yorker that Kojima had recently been laid off. According to the interview with Konami by Japanese news site Tokyo Sports, Kojima was instead on, and I love this, quote-unquote, a long vacation, hinting that the party he and other co-workers had was a wrap party and not a farewell party. The Konami rep went on to explain that after a massive project like Metal Gear Solid V, The Phantom Pain, Kojima was fatigued, needed a break, and that it's normal for studio heads to take a hiatus from game development after big projects. Konami did admit earlier in the year that it had dismantled Kojima Productions, however, so we'll see if this vacation is a long one or a permanent one. And needless to say, stay tuned. And also, pass the popcorn.
Yeah, I saw the picture of that little party. It looked like a farewell party. Everybody had, like, little champagne glasses and they're like toasting.
Well, I mean, it could be a rap party. I've seen rap parties with champagne glasses and all that stuff. But, yeah, the thing is, that when they dismantled this studio, that's about as go away as I can think of, you know?
Yeah, I guess they're trying to save face somehow, you know, make it seem like it's not a disastrous thing or something, because I think some people feel that they might lose stock or customers if, like, they admit, oh, yeah, coaching is gone, and it's like, oh, well, then why am I buying Konami games if coaching is gone?
Also, major games, you know, it's funny. You may say it's a long production and a hard production, but most developers I know are starting work on the next game in the middle of working, finishing up the other game.
I have heard of that, yes.
I mean, like, let me give you an example. They're not a big, big studio, but in Exile, they started working on Torment, Tides of Numenera, while they were still getting ready to ship Wasteland 2.
They were getting ready for Bard's 2.
Bard's Tale, yeah. I mean, so, and, you know, there's a reason why there's yearly Call of Duties, you know? And yeah, that's the way there was a yearly Guitar Hero for a while, the yearly long Rock Band. Well, actually, no. Sort of. I mean, they came out with, like, Rock Band Green Day, Rock Band, Lego Rock Band, and Rock Band Van Halen? Was it Van Halen? Yeah, it was Van Halen, wasn't it? I know they did Green Day. I know they did the Beatles. Did they do Van Halen or another man? I don't know. There are so many rock bands, just confused. You know, I still have my guitar here, the Penny Arcade licensed guitar from Mad Catz, which I'm not even sure it works, and I still haven't gotten Rock Band 4 yet. So,
yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, I'm willing to bet you they're just going to wait for like 10 months before they said, oh yeah, he's gone.
Yeah, he's moved on to other projects.
Yeah, his own. And here's the thing, that though, Konami still owns the Metal Gear license. Kojima does not own that license. So I'm wondering if maybe Kojima is going to go on to Kickstarter and do a game that's sort of like, you know, like Yooka-Laylee is made by the guys from Rare, but it's not Banjo-Kazooie.
There's Project Phoenix, they have a whole bunch of big names.
There's also
including the guy that did Kimetsu. I forgot his first name.
Well, we're also forgetting Mighty No. 9 is basically Mega Man. And that's
right.
I think I backed that. I played it at E3. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, so, I mean, it is entirely possible that he might do that. I know there's a Castlevania-like game. I can't remember its name now.
I just want to say one thing. Kojima, please, you can't write worth shit. Don't write your games. Please stop it.
Honestly,
you make
though,
my ears bleed.
I stopped with Konami once they shut down the studio that used to make Suikoden games. Hmm. After that, I was just like,
You know, I don't know. I mean, they tried with Lost Planet, and I really wanted to like Lost Planet, but yeah. Was Soul Calibur Konami?
I don't know.
I don't think so. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead.
Okay. 343 Industries.
No, it's 343. Trust me on this. Because 343 does not sound right, does it?
No. I thought they were saying 343 Industries. Okay,
no, 343, no. By the way, Soul Calibur is Namco Bandai.
Okay.
Actually, you know, here's the funny thing, is they've changed their name to Bandai Namco, and I'm trying to figure out why that happened. Did Bandai start getting more money than Namco? Because it used to be Namco Bandai, right? And now they're going Bandai Namco. It doesn't sound right.
Somebody must have felt that it did, or that it sounded better.
Are they going alphabetically in order now? Anyways, okay, so we're going to move on to the next item.
343 Industries not ruling out PC port of Halo 5 from PC Gamer. For those gamers who own a Xbox One, Halo 5 Guardians is shaping up to be one monster of a game, with not only an engaging single-player campaign, but a dynamic multiplayer mode and a deeper Forge map creator. 343 Industries is hinting around the PC gamers make it a taste as well in the future thanks to Windows 10. According to 343 Industries boss Frank O'Connor, Microsoft has made a huge commitment trying to normalize the Windows experience across multiple platforms. We see elements of Windows 10 are going to appear in Xbox and Cortana and stuff like that. There is plenty of chance that Halo 5 could appear on PC. Nothing to announce at this point, you know.
You know, when you say something like that, nothing to announce at this point, you've basically made a soft announcement, haven't you? You've basically told them this is happening, but not officially.
Yeah, it reminds me of the there was an image a long time ago of like half of a Microsoft logo and half a Borg cube and saying, "You will be assimilated. Resistance is futile." That's what this article is making me feel like. You're going to see elements of Windows 10 in everything now, just so we can bring them Halo 5. That's the Trojan horse here. So it wouldn't be the hardest thing in the world to move it to PC, take advantage of PC stuff. But nothing I announced today, I announced today on this chat.
You know, Frank, stop it. You've announced it. You basically announced it without announcing it.
Microsoft currently maintains Halo 5 Guardians as Xbox One, period.
You know, that reminds me of every time there's a rumor, there's a strong rumor, Microsoft always says the same line over and over. We do not respond to rumors or something like that, you know. Now, here's why it makes a crap ton of sense and why it makes so much sense that it makes me think it's not going to happen. Because the thing about Microsoft is that sometimes the smartest moves, they want to be clever and try something else. You know, they outsmart themselves, like with trying to install Windows Messenger into Xbox Live instead of having a Windows Live tray on your PC, you know, which would be a lot easier. So, let's rewind about a decade ago. Windows Vista came out, and if you remember, Microsoft tried to cloy people into getting Windows Vista by making Halo 2 Windows Vista only. Of course, people saw through that, and they showed that if you changed a few buttons, you could play on XP as well. You know, they were trying to monetize the internet as well, which was not a good idea, because it made Halo 2 suffer. It made what was the name of that game that was based? Oh, Shadowrun. That made Shadowrun suffer as well. So here's what's going on. If you remember a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Phil Spencer saying that he was really interested in having Xbox 360 games being playable on Windows 10, right? So what does that mean? Well, aside from games that haven't been released yet, well, the games that haven't been released yet on Windows has been stuff like Red Dead Redemption, but really you're talking about Halo 3, Halo 3 ODST, Halo 4, and Halo Reach. Now, you include with releasing Halo 5 for Windows 10, and the perfect time to do that would be when? When the free period is over. Remember, Windows 10 is free for a year. When that year is up, well, you have to pay for Windows 10, but look, hey, we have Halo 5 for Windows 10. So if you want to play it, you might as well get in. And in this case, it would actually technically be, you know, because they've incorporated Windows Live into Windows 10, so it is basically inseparable. So it isn't a bullshit thing like it was with Halo 2, and they're not going to charge for internet. So it might actually work. So what do you have? You have people who could play Halo 3, ODST, 4, and Reach, and then Halo 5, all on PC, all at the same time. So not only are you using the properties from your last-gen console to sell your OS, but, oh, and can you imagine if they also decided to make Halo 5 cross-platform play as well? You know, PC and Xbox One players playing against each other? That would be something, you know, that would be, you know, because here's the thing right now is that all the cross-platform play between PC and console has been all Sony. And mainly because, for whatever reason, Microsoft doesn't want a part of it. You know, oh, you're doing cross-platform with the PS4? Well, we don't want to be a part of it. That's why, that's the only reason why you don't have Final Fantasy 14 on the Xbox One. Because Microsoft doesn't want to share the, they don't want to be in the same playground with Sony. You know? So.
Well, they're going to with Minecraft because they.
Well, they bought Minecraft, and
right.
Minecraft is making them a crap ton of money. They're still not going to do cross-platform play, though. You know, it's a different, that's a different thing. That's just, you know.
They have Windows 10, so that way you can play with your Xbox friends.
You know what's really disappointing is that they're releasing the Halo 5 characters from Minecraft, right? For Windows 10, Minecraft, and Xbox One. I would love it if they released it for PlayStation 4. Hey, look, you can play some iconic Microsoft Xbox characters on your PlayStation 4. Sort of like free advertising for the Xbox One. Hey, look, we have Master Chief running around on your PS4. Don't you want to play with Master Chief? They should do that. It's just sort of what are you going to do about it? I mean, Sony's not going to get pissed off at it. It may irritate them a lot, you know.
It's just a scam.
But what are they going to say? No, you can't have Minecraft on any PlayStation products anymore because you did that. They're not going to say that. So, yeah, I don't know, your opinion, let's get some more of you here.
I was just saying that, you know, the whole thing with the Minecraft is I think they are trying to get it fully playable between platforms, at least Xbox and PC, and I think they would want to get at least their PC and Xbox. I mean, I don't understand this whole Xbox being divided from their PC games.
But it's not. It's just the opposite. They're actually melding them more because there's more and more games, PC games, that I'm able to get Xbox achievements on. Right?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that's one thing I never understood, why people didn't like Windows Live. I mean,
they were having trouble getting it to work.
I don't think it's that. I just think they didn't like Microsoft. And they said, ew, what's this? What's, you know, you had the PC master race going, ew, what's this console stuff on our system? Ugh. You know? And then they run to Gabe Newell, who's screwing them daily. You know? Oh, did you see where the controllers for the Steam Box don't work?
Yeah, they want the... That's right. That was another news article I read for where they want the fan base to design a better...
We screwed up on the gamepad. Can you make it for us? it's so cheesy, you know?
Well, you know, thankfully you can buy controllers from a whole bunch of different vendors. Just
including... Microsoft released the wireless interface for the Xbox One controller, which I don't think is necessary. I don't mind using a wired Xbox One controller on my PC,
Using a Logitech one. I'm happy with it.
I don't like Logitech because they copy the PlayStation 4 controllers, and I really don't like the thumb pads being down like that.
I like it.
One up, one... No, it doesn't feel right. One up, and the D-pad is underneath, and the other one is up, you know, and it's close to the right trigger. You know, it makes sense that way. This also reminds me, this is another article you wanted to talk about, but, you know, talking about people making their own stuff, you have this alpha of a Zelda level creator, you know, and I'm wondering how soon Nintendo's going to come down with it with a hammer.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they're going to knock it out because, you know...
But here's the thing, if they give away it free, it's not a trademark violation if you do it free.
Mm.
So, you can't. I mean, if they're not accepting any money whatsoever, they can't do what the Pokemon Company did with that poor guy and his $60. You know, and Nintendo has to understand something. This is the internet. Once that build engine is out there, you can't stop it.
That's true.
It's like George Lucas trying to smash all the copies of the Star Wars, the Star Wars Holiday Special. Can't do it.
If I were Nintendo, I would release a Zelda maker because I would post up an image of the Fry meme going, take all my money, shut up and take it all right now.
A better idea would be just, what's it called, pay these guys and say, finish it and we take it. Thank you. I mean,
it would be, yes.
I mean, but here's the thing, Nintendo still hasn't gotten it. I mean, they've lessened it a little bit, but I hear a lot of complaints about people with the Mario Maker in that you have to unlock pieces, and then you have to wait a couple of days to get them.
That's stupid.
It's incredibly stupid. Oh, you want the chain... what do they call it? Is it the chain saw? No, chain gun...
The little chomp chomp?
Anyways... Okay, you have to build this level that you don't really want to make to unlock it, and then you have to wait 2 days to get it. Two real-life days. It is absolutely ridiculous.
That sounds like a Facebook game.
That is not, you know, and Nintendo, that is not how the internet works. That is not how it works. And here's the worst part. It used to be 9 days that you had to wait, but they lessened it. Gee, I wonder why. They can't admit they're wrong and just give everything out there. You know, just... At this point in the frustration, they could charge $1 and make a mint just from people get, okay, here's $1, unlock everything, thank you.
They would make so much money if they did a Zelda Dungeon Maker. I kid you, I would buy that so quick. Wow.
Yeah.
Whatever.
But Nintendo's lawyers have cabbage for brains.
Yep.
They see, sue it! We can make a few $1,000s on the lawsuit instead of a couple million selling it.
I don't know if Nintendo is innovative enough anymore, right? I mean, maybe
people have been saying
it for a while now.
People would rather play the Zelda stuff that's being made on the editor than the actual Zelda game that's coming out.
Yeah.
You know? Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item, and this one's actually a happy story for once. Rebellion rescues Kickstarter backers from Grin's bankruptcy. Grin's Kickstarter for the very dark fairy tale platformer Wolf the Red Hood Diaries. And, you know, you say something like Wolf the Red Hood Diaries, don't you immediately think it's something that's softcore on Cinemax?
No.
Was a Pyrrhic victory. While the game was successfully completed and released on Steam, the developer had to file for bankruptcy and was unable to honor the physical rewards promised to backers, which included art books, posters, and a box edition. And the second chapter had to be scrapped. Founder Wim Wooters wrote in a Kickstarter update in August, "I guess our public silence in the last few months has already said a lot. It is not out of disrespect that our communication dropped almost zero. It is out of shame." He explained that the post-release sales of the game were bad enough that his two partners actually walked out on him and that Grin had to shutter. He blamed it on overreaching past the studio's capability, like a smart drug dealer might say, "Don't get high on your own supply." So no physical rewards, no sequel, and another bleak crowdfunding story. Except for the news today, which would be 2 days ago, that publisher Rebellion had come to the rescue to the property. And backers. In an update today, the company announced that it will be fulfilling all backer rewards and will be developing the second volume of the game provisionally. I should say. The studio will be honoring and shipping all the Kickstarter rewards, both physical and digital, and may work on the second volume of the game using their own proprietary Asura engine. The thing is that the current engine that's used on the first that was being used was Unreal Engine 3, which, by the way, is a good way to bankrupt yourself because Epic really charges a lot for that thing. I mean, that's the entire reason that 2 Human failed was because of legal troubles with the Unreal Engine. Anyways, and it's fairly... early in the acquisition to make promises about making Volume 2, but they do mention they have all the art assets. And the wording that they used in the Kickstarter reward says that they're probably going to do it. I mean, why else would you buy the property if you're just going to sit on it? You know, as for the original game, they won't support it at first because it's done in the Unreal Engine 3 instead of their own. And, you know, so I've seen pictures of the game. I don't know how it plays, but it looks beautiful.
Yeah, I think it's been... revamped, because I remember following this, and I think I remember a Red Riding Hood character, and she was supposed to be like a drunk alcoholic or something, but I guess that I don't know if that's still in there or not.
They expanded what was in the game when they should have just make it an action platformer. You don't have to make it into a free roaming thing like a Castlevania, you know. And yeah, it just made its Kickstarter backing, which is a trouble because they also, when you do that, you have to pay Amazon and you have to pay Kickstarter, like 50% of whatever you make.
Yeah, I think it's like Paul's mentioned before, this seems like a case of people who didn't know how to do the business side of video game making, and it went all horribly wrong.
I mean, Grin did something else. I mean, it sounds so familiar. Yeah, it was founded in 1997, and, right, it made Bionic Commando, Rearmed, and it made, oh, that's right, they made the Tom Clancy Advanced Warfighter games. That's where I remember their name most from. So, yeah, I mean, they did that, and but here's the thing, they had to cancel the their unnamed Strider reboot, they had to cancel their Streets of Rage remake, they had to cancel three other games. You know,
yeah, that starts really hurting the wallet when they.
Although I will say that those are, you know, a couple of them are older games, like these were for the Xbox and the Xbox 360, but still, you know, they made some major games, and I remember playing Advanced Warfighter on the original Xbox. That was really cool. It was on the 360. I'm sorry. So yeah, I mean, and oh god, Bionic Commando Rearmed was just so difficult. You know, I guess the arcade game was difficult, but I don't remember it being that difficult. And then Bionic Commando was a complete and utter mess. And Terminator Salvation is one of the worst games that were ever made.
See, this Red Riding Hood game is interesting to me because I never really... I mean, like, how many fairy tale character games...
Oh, you're
games?
Kidding, right? American McGee. Anything. I mean, American McGee did the Alice games.
Yeah.
He also did Wizard of Oz game, you know, Grim and Bloody with a giant bloody knife. I mean, if you want, American McGee basically invented the genre, taking a fairy tale and making it bloody and gory. Just check out the American McGee's Alice games.
Yeah, I remember Alice, the Alice games, but that's still not very many.
There was also a game called The Path. It was an indie game. And it was part of a Humble Bundle, and I really enjoyed it. And what happens is that you play a Robin Hood of several ages, a young, not a toddler, but, you know, just after a toddler, a prepubescent, a pubescent, and, like, senior high school versions, and they all react differently to the wolf is something different to each of them. You know, I mean, I think it's called The Path. You should look it up on Steam. It's probably $2 or something.
I guess I'll put it in this way, in a sea of a whole bunch of white, dark-haired men games.
Here's the thing, though. It's not a game. It's more like it's like one of those non-games in which it's an adventure game, which you're just getting results
non-game.
And telling a story. You know, it's an un-game.
How's it un-game? A game is a game. We can, oh my god, we can have an entire podcast on defining what a game is.
It's,
you know?
it's a work of art. Let me put it that way. It's an interactive fiction work of art.
Why can't it be both? Why can't it be
in this
game
case? It's not a game because you don't. You know what? We're not going to spend the entire podcast on this argument because we've already spent a lot of time already, and I don't want to. So we're going to move on to the next item. In other words.
All right.
Anyways, I will say that, you know, it's a nice happy ending for the people who backed the game. I mean, they
yes.
got the game, but they're also getting their Kickstarter rewards. Some of them, you know, were shocked that this – I would be too, by the way.
I'm glad that this game has been saved and we'll probably see it in a different iteration.
And there are people who – you know, despite the negative things that are said about the game, and I think a lot of negative things were said about it because of the situation with Grin and not having to do with the game, a lot of them are saying, well, we really want to see where it goes, you know. So there's that. So we'll see if it's a successful franchise now, especially since Rebellion's done a lot of big games, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember their games. I remember they made that game. Yeah. Here it is, Rebellion Developments. I know they did some... Oh, here we are. Oh, right, they did Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six. They did Medal of Honor. They did... they did Rogue Trooper. They did Star Wars Battlefront Elite Squadron.
That that XFLAB.
They did this. They did Simpsons game.
The video game review.
They did Aliens vs. Predator.
Adam Savage and Morgan Webb did a little thing with Steve in Rainbow Six, and they were always messing with each other. Mm-hmm. A little machinima in Rainbow Six. I think it was Tom Clancy's Rainbow
Six.
Yeah,
they're also best known right now for doing Sniper Elite. Mm. But yeah, I mean, they did Aliens vs. Predator. Although the Aliens vs. Predator 2 was a better game, but still. But they also did... they did Gun. And I enjoyed Gun. I don't know why people didn't like Gun. I mean, yeah, it was no... although they did the PSP version. Never mind. But I liked Gun. But they did the Simpsons game, if you remember that one. No. The console game. I remember because on the Xbox 360, it had the easiest achievement ever, in which you press start. You get the achievement. And like everything, it was self-referential. I mean, one of my favorite things was they meet up with this 8-bit Simpsons game, right? And the 8-bit Simpson game is like, how many lives do you have? He says, we have infinite lives. He says, no way, that's too easy. Because, you know, now you don't lose a life. You just have to start over from a checkpoint. Anyways, we're moving on to the next item. I believe this is you.
Okay. Classic car combat RPG Auto Duel may be making a comeback in Exile. This is from the Game Watcher. It seems that Brian Fargo and In Exile may be exhuming another classic role-playing game for development. The indie studio has already produced Wasteland 2 and is currently working on Torment, Tides of Numera, a spiritual successor to Planescape Torment and The Bard's Tale. Now it seems they have their sights set on Auto Duel. RPG Codex spotted a trademark filing by In Exile for Auto Duel, and it's unlikely it's the aborted Dave Joffe indie game that itself was a spiritual successor to Twisted Metal. Auto Duel was a top-down, open-world RPG that allowed players to customize their own weaponized cars and either use them in arena combat or deliver packages, or just hunt down scum on the highways and take their stuff. It was developed by Richard Garriott's Origin Systems Studio way back in the late 80s for Commodore 64 and Apple II.
And also a Commodore Amiga. I forgot they made a translation for that version as well. So yeah, I'm really excited because this is a game that I play on an emulator. You know, and the thing is that the graphics are really, really, really primitive, but it's still addictive as heck. So I can just imagine how it would look. Now, I hope they keep the top down. As a matter of fact, since I have access, some access to Brian Fargo, I'm just gonna say, hey, listen, you know, keep it top down. You can change everything else, but keep it top down, because we don't really need another Interstate 76, 79. You know, we don't need to be, you know, actually driving the car. That's not the point. The point is that you put guns and flamethrowers on your car, and you shoot at other people.
Wasteland 2 is isometric, so you can...
It's not quite the same. I'd rather have it top-down. Because in this case, you're driving a car. You're not moving a person around, you know?
Right.
I mean, it basically, they turned Wasteland 2 into more of a Baldur's Gate-style game, which is fine. You know, I'm discovering that I prefer my role-playing games to be first-person than isometric, and that's probably going to be a discussion later. As a matter of fact, I think that is going to be... Because that was one of the points you were trying to make to me earlier today. So we'll discuss that later. But I'm really happy to see Auto Duel coming back, even if it's, you know, not quite in the way I want it, because, like, here's the thing. Auto Duel, way back in the day, was as open-ended as you could get without... Because I'm going to tell you something. I never did find the main plot line. As a matter of fact, I don't think it even had a main plot line. Just... Or maybe you had to get a certain level before things started happening, but no. It was also difficult as heck, by the way. It was a good kind of difficult. It was like, okay, starting over. You ever have those games in which they're really, really difficult, but if you die, it's like, okay, fine. I'm going to just have to start over. You ever have games like that in which you don't care that you're dying because you have so much fun at it?
No, I've never. No.
Really?
Really, if I die a lot, I tend to quit.
No. I don't mean die a lot. It's more like... You built up this character, you die, say, oh, okay, I'll just start over. It's one of those games.
I feel like I've wasted all my time then if I have to start over.
Well, what about something like Civilization when you just get your ass handed to you?
A new game. That's a new game, not necessarily the same experience.
Well, here's the thing is that that's the thing about Autoduel, though. It isn't there's no plot line at the beginning. You just do things. I mean, generally, the one thing that you always almost do is you have to take your car into the arena and fight to get some more money. And that's about it.
What is it called when it generates differently every time?
Procedurally generated?
Like, you won't ever see the same thing. It's like
procedurally generated.
Yeah, okay.
Randomized?
Right.
I mean, randomized. I mean, but that's what Autoduel was as well. But the thing about Autoduel is that all the connections between the cities were randomized. You just had to go in a certain direction for a certain amount of time before you reached the end. I would like to see them actually craft actual highways the way they are and sort of like post-apocalyptic. Mm. So, you know, it's actually crafted highways that are always the same, you know. I mean, the enemies on the road can be randomized, right? But just, you know, so you start getting used to certain routes. Anyways, I'm really excited about Autoduel coming back, and it seems like it's going to come back. And I'm going to make sure I voice my opinion to Brian Fargo, because here's the funny thing is when I met Brian Fargo at that Wasteland 2 thing, I talked about the one game that I really wanted to see make a comeback was Autoduel. And I'm hoping it was sort of like me giving a subliminal message to him back in June. Get Autoduel. Get Autoduel. Get Autoduel. And it's because of me that they're doing Autoduel, so I'll take all the credit for that. Even if it isn't true. Anyways, you can move on to the next item. And this one might interest you. Or maybe not. Pete Hines. Entire game not on Fallout 4 PC disc. And this comes to us from Twitter. Pete Hines has revealed in a conversation on Twitter that the PC version of Fallout 4 requires a Steam download, as the entire game is not on the disc it comes with. According to Hines, you still have to download from Steam. The disc doesn't contain the entire game. The reason is simple. Console games now regularly use Blu-rays, which have a greater capacity than DVDs, and Blu-ray drives are not the standard for PC yet. And consoles don't need Steam activation anyway. Hines says that PC requires activation on Steam. Console does not. Console ship on Blu-rays. PC ships on DVDs. None of this is new, however, because he also says that we've been doing it this way for more or less for the past 10-plus years. Seems to be doing okay. Lots of people bought Skyrim, Wolfenstein, etc. Why the game doesn't come on multiple discs wasn't explained, but it could be a cost issue, which actually now that it doesn't, because I'm going to tell you something. Those discs cost like a couple of pennies. You know, because they're made of carbon. Carbon is common. And besides, a lot of players will probably purchase the game digitally on Steam and download the entire game anyway.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. There's a lot of people upset on Twitter about this, though, because they thought that it was interfering. It was DRM and all that stuff.
Honestly, Jonah, you could throw a rock and find somebody upset about something other than the rock you just threw at them.
Yeah. I mean, I can see a point, at least, that, you know,
I don't really want to get into the different topics that I've seen discussed lately that have been enraging people.
Like, suppose you don't have access to the internet, for one, and you want to play Fallout 4. It's going to be kind of hard if you have the disc and you're not able to log on to whatever.
If you do download initially...
No, but I'm just saying they don't have any internet. Here's the problem. What if you don't have internet? Because not everybody has internet, period.
Right.
Or suppose you have really slow internet.
Then I guess you're going to have to get it.
Wait 48 hours. You know, you have your 9600 baud modem, and, you know.
You'll have to buy it on Xbox or PS4.
But suppose you can't afford those. You only have one. You have one platform. You chose PC.
Well, then I guess you can't buy Fallout 4 then.
Well, I mean, what they might be able to do, I guess, is write in to Bethesda and ask them for a second disc or something like that. You know, I mean, it might be easier for them to do on a dial-up modem to just do the Steam activation check. You have the game on your system, boom, okay. But, yeah, I mean, it's moving forward, and I don't know anybody who's, you know, I don't think many people are going to be buying Fallout 4, the PC version, from retail anyway. I think almost all of them, a good chunk of them are just going to be downloading the entire thing on Steam.
Yeah, I'll be doing that, downloading it on Steam. I should have done that with Skyrim, but oh well.
And you also have pre-downloads too. Like I said, you know, people are getting left behind, but at this point, maybe they should contact whomever to give them better access to the internet.
You know, maybe they just needed to have, I don't know. It's just, there's not enough demand for enough discs to be used. You know, there's just, if they see enough of the profit can be gained by digital and that they're not losing to the hard discs, then they're just gonna.
I would buy Fallout 4 on PC if it had Steam Xbox Live Achievements, because that's what I did with Fallout 3. Fallout 3 had Live Achievements, which I liked very much, and I actually doubled up because I rented it on Xbox 360, got the achievements in the Xbox 360, then bought the PC version, which was the limited edition version too, which came with a lunchbox. I still have the Fallout 3 lunchbox.
That's cool.
Yeah. Anyways, and I got the PC achievements for that too. So at some point, hopefully when they do Windows 10 versions of games that are, you know, they will be including achievements on those. And there's no reason not to, because they're going to be, there's achievements on the console version anyway, and so, you know, we just copy it. Same achievements on both the Xbox One and the PC. No big deal. So I hope that hurries up.
I don't know if when you say Windows 10, you mean like
Windows 10 apps. All the Windows 10 games have live achievements.
Right.
The Windows 10 apps, though. I mean, app games. I mean, it's going to be the same thing with when you have the full games, when they're finally going to be Windows 10. It's going to happen at some point in which it's going to be, you know, Windows 10 only.
Games that won't run on Windows 7 and only Windows 10.
And not on Windows 8 either. Yeah. It's going to happen. I mean, it's going to happen with the Microsoft game. Although, I don't know many first... Well, yeah. I mean, like I said, Windows... Halo 5, hello.
Halo 5 is not going to work on me. That's crappy Bay as far as I'm concerned.
And also, you know, you can have the Xbox 360 games once they're compatible with PC. That's going to be really cool, by the way. Because, you know, I'll be able to retire my 360 console and just play the games on the PC. And save the console for when, say, my Xbox One becomes defective or something. Then I'll play Xbox 360 games on it, you know, on my TV. Not such a bad thing to do. Although it's kind of strange to be playing Mass Effect on a 4K TV. Anyways, we're going to move on to the last item. Go ahead.
Vivendi seeking more shares of Ubisoft board seats from Bloomberg. Ubisoft is insisting that the publisher will maintain control in the face of Vivendi buying 6.6% of company stock, but Vivendi has bigger plans. According to Vivendi representative, these investments are part of a strategic vision of operational coverage between
Vivendi convergence.
Convergence between Vivendi's content and platforms on one hand, and Ubisoft and Gameloft productions in video games on the other.
Stop for a moment. What do you think they're saying there? These investments are part of a strategic vision of operational convergence between Vivendi's content and platforms on one hand and Ubisoft. Yeah, well, we're saying we're going to buy you and you're going to publish your games and make money from your games and you're not going to see a penny of it.
Yeah, basically the evil mustache pro.
They want to eat up Ubisoft for a while and just swallow their money and then leave.
Not really surprised. Vivendi is just, yeah.
Well, we can move on to the rest of the article. Says what Vivendi has done in the past.
Back in 2010, Electronic Arts purchased 15% of Ubisoft stocks, but later sold them. Vivendi once had controlling interest in Activision Blizzard, but the latter managed to divest Vivendi of its shares in 2013.
Right, you know, and... If I remember, those are dark years for Activision Blizzard. I mean, basically, the only thing that was keeping them together was World of Warcraft and Diablo. Maybe Diablo 3 a little bit too, but Diablo 3 had some... Diablo 3 was so mismanaged during the Vivendi years. You had people who are coming off Diablo 3 just trashing it. And, you know, and from Diablo 2 trashing Diablo 3, and Diablo 3 developers got pissed off. But then after Vivendi left, they said, "Yeah, we made some crap," and they had to fix everything.
Yeah, they bought Sierra titles and did nothing with them for years and years.
Oh no, Vivendi just sucked the life out of Sierra and just left it to die.
Yes, it did.
I mean,
that's why I don't like that company.
You know, like, does anybody remember? Well, I mean, does do we remember? We remember when Sierra Online was a thing. Yeah. You know, Sierra Online is nothing now. I mean, it's like Atari. It's just a brand that, that has nothing behind it.
Well, it's being reborn, I guess.
No, it's someone else has the name. It's not Sierra. That's gone. It's like Infogrames changing the name to Atari. It's still Infogrames. Atari is dead. It's for a long time. So yeah, I mean, so Ubisoft. You've seen the Meaning of Life, right?
The
Monty Python's Meaning of Life.
A little bit, yeah.
Do you remember the opening little short film about the people in the office with who are pirates? That's basically who Vivendi is. There are these pirates in an office building swimming around and destroying other buildings, other investment firms. You know. Oh, damn, I forgot. The Crimson Pirate Assurance. Crimson Assurance.
I mean, when I played the King's Quest game, finished it, I felt like that was the King's Quest experience. Like, the spirit of Sierra was being continued through that game. So
what's that clipping?
Oh, sorry, I'm missing something. Anyways, but I'm just saying, I think the spirit of Sierra still is present in the current Sierra company, which is, I guess, Odd Gentlemen are a part of. I think there's another.
Are you going to start singing "And the Heart of Rock and Roll is Still Beating"?
No. I'm just trying to say that I think the spirit of Sierra was about, you know, making lighthearted, you know, enjoyable games that didn't always have to be shooting stuff up, and you know that's what King's Quest was, the new one that came out from Odd Gentlemen. So I feel like, in a way, Sierra is still around or has been reborn, just like a phoenix from the ashes.
Yeah, but it's still not the same people, though. I mean,
obviously it's not the same people. I know it's not Ken and Roberta.
I mean, well, Roberta Williams could still make games. Who's the woman who did Phantasmagoria? Was that Roberta Williams or someone else?
Yes, that was Roberta Williams.
No, someone else then. Jane.
Jane Jensen.
Jane Jensen is doing a game.
She made a new Gabriel Knight game. I have no idea how she did it, but she did it.
Yeah, she Kickstarted it.
No, I think, mean, like, how
there was a Kickstarter project, and she had a choice of three. No, it wasn't that one. Oh well. But Jane Jensen, yeah, she's still making games.
There's Corey and Lori Williams. I'm sorry, Corey and Lori Cole, who did the Quest for Glory. There was, I forget her name now. It's like Christina something, who did Conquest of Camelot and Lombo. Roberta also did the Dagger of Amun-Ra, Lorbo.
I think Phantasmagoria really needs a next gen upgrade instead of being video capture.
I don't know. I thought it was.
But it was really, really cheesy the way they had the picture capture. You know, just make it pure CGI. You know. Anyways, we gotta start wrapping this up. So
yeah,
Now, Paul, what am I saying? Scott, you were discussing Fallout and Wasteland. And by the way, for those of you who don't know, Fallout is basically a spiritual successor to Wasteland, you know. It also is supposed to be a Steve Jackson's game, but Steve Jackson turned out to be such a prick that they decided to dump his GURPS and went with their own little special version, you know.
I was just thinking that the Wasteland 2... the success of it shows that, and the success of, you know, the Shadowrun
and Pillars of Eternity,
and Pillars of Eternity shows that, you know, you can still have your isometric games and
a Baldur's Gate style game. Yes.
Yeah. Could have. Well, some of these came before Baldur's Gate, like Fallout.
I get that. I'm just saying. Wasteland is a top down. So
and there's Ultima. There's a whole.
That's also top down for the most part.
There's an Ultima. I think it's 6.
Ultima 6 started the isometric, yes.
Yeah. That was isometric. But basically, to me,
7.
Isometric is not dead. It's just, you know, you can modernize it, make it better if you need to. You know, if the mechanics were broken or something, you can fix it.
Yeah,
you
know, here's that's going to lead to the question of the week.
Right.
Do you prefer first-person or isometric RPGs? And that's the question we're asking everybody out there, and apparently you've already made your vote.
Yes.
Okay, I actually go the other way in first person. Now, the thing is that I didn't realize this until I started playing isometric RPGs, and I just couldn't do it. I mean, It wasn't that I was... You see, here's the thing. When I was first playing RPGs and all that stuff, it was top-down, and also I really did not like first-person shooters at the time, which was Quake, Doom. I thought that was entirely too much of it. And then I realized that really what I was reacting to wasn't the fact I didn't like first-person shooters, but I think I wasn't like everybody else and just enjoyed first-person shooters because they were first-person shooters. No, they had no... Absolutely no style... No game mechanics, except for the fact you're in a first-person shooter, you're shooting stuff, you know. When I started turning around on stuff like first-person RPGs like Deus Ex, you know, and after that, and also Daggerfall and the Elder Scrolls series. So, yeah, although I will say that I'm sick of Elder Scrolls now, for a completely different reason, because it's way too open world. I mean, I do like a somewhat linear experience. It doesn't have to be 100% linear, just... linear enough that I don't go on a billion side quests that have nothing to do with anything, and all the traveling that you have to do. I think that's the worst part of open-world first-person RPGs. All the frickin' travel. The entire game is going from one point A to point B. That's not fun. That's annoying. You know? Fetch quests. Fetch quests. I don't want to play, as Yahtzee would say, a MMOPGR.
What?
A MMOPGR. An MMO, MMORPG.
Oh.
I love the way he says, this is a MMORPGR. Because he's spelling it out phonetically.
Well, I didn't mind it because I mean, maybe they could have had more stuff.
I didn't know. Here's the thing. You know, people who are really, really into Elder Scrolls and really into Skyrim are not going to change. That's the kind of game they like. You know?
I like that game. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, for me... I like a little more direct, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about first-person versus isometric. Now, you said you liked, the Elder Scrolls, but you
I like the ability of controlling a party, you know, basically, yeah. Having multiple people and not just being just one sole character there in I don't care about voice acting. You know, it's nice, but it's not needed to me. I didn't mind all the text. You know, I like reading. It's fine.
Maybe it's the fact I got tired of hearing people attacking me, calling me a filthy swit.
For what? In which game?
The Elder Scrolls. Well, that's Daggerfall and Morrowind and the Cathar, the cat people. They all call you a filthy swit. Oh no, it's the Argonians, the lizard people. I don't remember, but I know they kept on calling you filthy swit.
I don't know. I don't remember. I just remember walking around town and there was one particular guy who would constantly be like, oh, I've been at the Cloud District. You wouldn't know about that. I was like, I've been to the dude so many times. I just got sick and killed him. I was tired of it. Like, shut up.
What about the guy who was talking about having an arrow in his knee?
Well, that's multiple people saying that.
But how many people get... Maybe you should start shooting people in the knee. Because I did it to you.
Apparently that's a metaphor for they got married, like having a ball and chain attached to them.
No, that's not
it really
fun.
Is. It's a Dutch, I think it's Dutch or Norwegian. It's a old saying about that. You know, I got married, so I can't go out and do this stuff. You know,
I just kill all the shopkeepers and where no one can see it, and then all the stuff is mine.
The isometric to me gives me a different kind of control that I like. I like, you know, just. Seeing the big picture, everything around me, and just little ants and whatnot. That's what I like.
You know what? Is there going to be a Baldur's Gate 3? I thought I heard
there might be. There is. I was going on about the last episode that there's a Attack on Dragonspear, which is going to be an expansion to the first game, and will link right to. It'll actually fill in the story between the two games. To, you know, so it's not just like. You're getting this info dump telling you, oh, you went with your buddies and you got captured. This will, like, kind of bring you right to the second game, you know, like a direct link, not just, you know, oh, you got kidnapped and now your stuff is gone and Arrhenicus is torturing you and now you'll...
No one ever gives any love to Icewind Dale. That's the forgotten game, Icewind Dale.
They did do an
HD remake of it, yes, but I'm talking about, you know, it's like an afterthought. It's like no one really cares about Icewind Dale, it seems to me.
Because they didn't have memorable NPCs like Boo.
Well,
like
it was a dungeon hack, basically, but still.
Like, Minsk and Boo, you know, you got characters like Edwin and Chihiro and Immelwind and just all these different memorable characters. And it's like, I think that's why people like a lot of these games.
Always remember that party you start off with. They don't like each other. And one of my favorite lines from any video game is when I think it was Chihiro who says, "You amuse me in a what the hell is wrong with you kind of way." And then Zara will say, "Stop touching me!"
Yeah.
It was always random, you know, and because this party would just break up immediately. I always went with a good party. I mean, at some point, maybe when I get around to it, if I play Baldur's Gate, I'll be evil so that I can get along with the Zentarum instead of having to fight them.
Well, there are mods that you can make those NPCs not contentious.
No, I'd rather have them contentious. I want a contentious group. I want them to meld together. I'm sorry, but you know that's the way it is. You know, I mean, I don't need the Order of the Stick.
Murder each other there because there are certain NPCs that'll just straight up kill each other.
I know.
Like, Minsk will always attack.
As much as you'd like to have Order of the Stick with Belkar being the lone evil guy, you know. Anyways, I always had an 18. I always gave my guy an 18 charisma, just cause. So we can be friends with everybody.
There's a ring that'll give you 18 charisma. So.
Oh, see, that maybe I did use the cheat to make everything on the screen die, if only because those kobolds were attacking on Moss. It's like instant death. I mean, I never thought I would be so afraid of kobold archers.
Well, you need to fix your strategies. Then there's like very.
My strategy is to cheat and have them all die with the hand of God.
You know that works for you then.
Hey, if God didn't want me to cheat, they wouldn't have made a cheat mode. So, anyways, that's the question of the week. Do you prefer first-person or isometric RPGs? Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast or at the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum. Or send your comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some iTunes comments. I am Jonah at Jonah Falcon on Twitter, and he is at Alpha Shard on Twitter as well. I think we did it a little bit shorter this time. It's not going to be an hour and a half. Actually, 2 hours like the last time. I had to cut out the entire Chinese article, what's it called, because it was 30 minutes.
Wow.
So it'll be, you know, and the thing is my outtakes are now 2 hours long. I mean, that's not without editing them down to where it's not just a lot of dead air.
Right.
But still, it's an entire episode unto itself by now. So I should really start editing the outtakes and get that ready.
Right.
You know, I'm going to have to watch My Little Pony. That'll coax Paul right back onto the show for an episode. So we'll do the discussion of Season 5 or Season 4, whatever it was, about My Little Pony.
Okay, that sounds like an idea.
You know, have you ever heard of the PBS Idea Channel?
Yeah, I think so. They have a little light bulb as a logo.
Yeah, I mean, they're best known for having the argument fallacies, you know. Hello, someone may be concerned that you're not doing your argument to the best of your abilities. You're doing the no true Scotsman fallacy. That's right. They had actually an article about bronies, and I sent it to Paul. I haven't gotten a response from him about it. He did respond to the article I sent him with the first review of Gem and the Holograms, and basically his reaction was, "See, I told you."
No one's shocked.
But I will watch My Little Pony for thing. I'm not a brony, but I'll have to watch the episodes. I just have to think it's weird for the writers of that show to know that there's a bunch of college-age students who love their show unironically and watch it. They obviously know. I wonder if it alters their writing at all, you know, or if they do one or two lines that is sort of like a wink to the older audience.
Well, if they're if they're toting the whole friendship is magic, then they're probably appreciative of any viewers that they have.
Yeah. Anyways, we will see you next week. And maybe Paul will be here, but no promises.
Well, I hope to see him, and happy gaming, everyone.